Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's episode 154. I'm just randomly saying the number. It really means nothing. I'm Matt Goss. That's Bob Mackwitz. How you doing, Bob?
Matty, I'm surprisingly good considering about 12 hours ago I wasn't so good.
Yeah, we will get into the Leafs 5-2. It's rare when a game is 5-2 and that score flatters the Maple Leafs, but That's clearly what happened. We will get...
They dodged a bullet at 5-2.
Yeah. I actually have a funny story about how I knew the Leafs were losing, and I'll tell that in a little bit.
Okay.
Because it involves, I heard the game, a little bit of the game on the radio. But before we get to all that, we need to start with the most important story of the day.
Okay.
Ketchup.
All right.
So, on Sunday morning, I am at the Drake Devonshire, the really nice hotel in Prince Edward County, overlooking Lake Ontario. It's gorgeous. It's swank. It's wonderful. And I'm having breakfast by myself, overlooking the waves, lapping onto the shore, blah, blah, blah. So I get the Drake breakfast, you know, eggs, bacon, sausage, baked beans. By the way, baked beans, underrated. And the very hip, cool-looking waiter said, would you like some ketchup? And in my head, I'm like, yeah, I would like just a little bit of ketchup, you know, just a little. But I was in cool guy place, so I said no. I chickened out. I couldn't ask for the ketchup. Because as an adult man, I felt I'd be shamed if I did it.
Okay, so two things.
Yeah.
I actually have a scientific theory that I worked out over many years.
I know this theory.
That the intelligence of an individual is inversely proportionate to the amount of ketchup you put on your eggs.
And if I could stop you there.
On your eggs, though. Yeah, that's the key. Not adjacent. On your eggs.
Mine would have been adjacent. But I remember that theory because your theory had a lot of math, had a lot of stats, and it also had this. just the farting sound of the plastic ketchup bottle as you spray it all over the eggs.
Is that the single least dignified sound on the planet Earth? The farting ketchup bottle on the eggs.
Barack Obama could be quoting Sylvia Plath, but if at the same time he's got the Heinz ketchup.
Chardet could be on a reclining couch with an ermine stole on.
Exactly.
And she would sound like...
Do you know what she would sound like?
A trucker.
No. Very close. She would sound like the blue-collar comedy tour. Basically, she'd be saying, get her done!
That's fine. I was about to say, that sound is the sonic equivalent of a MAGA hat.
Yeah. Of course, that's some of the blue-collar comedies, actually. Anyway.
I got no beef against blue-collar comedy.
No, I know. But sometimes when you link it with maggots, you know, never the best.
Well, you were doing that. I didn't link it.
You linked it.
You linked it. You insinuated that blue-collar was necessarily a part of it. You brought that up.
You know
up.
What? You're right, Bob. I'm looking in the mirror. I don't like who's looking back. Let's get from
You are BoJack Horseman, but anyway.
Let's get from links to sausage links to back to ketchup.
Okay, yes, so back to ketchup. There? So that was the mathematical theory. The other thing is, I've always admired Landsberg for his lack of shame about putting ketchup on his steak.
Yeah.
He asks for it.
Yep.
He doesn't care. Yep. If anybody says anything about it, he's like, I'm paying for this steak. Shut up.
He's wrong.
He is wrong, but he doesn't care.
Yeah, because like steaks worse than eggs. In terms of the steaks are a lot lower with eggs than they are with the meat.
The worst thing you can do is put mustard on prosciutto. Then it's ketchup on steak.
Oh.
Then the eggs thing gets complicated, though, because honestly, if we're being truthful, and we should be, not only are scrambled eggs okay with ketchup, they're better with ketchup.
Yeah, they need a little ketchup.
They
not
need
a lot,
it on just, the side.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Right?
But you can see...
10-year-olds put it on the eggs.
Yeah.
Grown-ups put it to the side.
Yes. See, it made me realize at that point, as I was too chicken to ask for ketchup, it made me realize now I know why parents have children. So when they go to restaurants and the children ask for ketchup, they sneak a little bit of their kids' ketchup when the servers and the waiters and the waitresses aren't around.
Do you know what the other thing that's really good about kids?
Chicken fingers.
Well, yes. Actually, that's a great point with the plum sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Also, potato chips on everything.
Oh, yeah.
you can always justify putting, because potato chips, unless you're at a barbecue, mm-hmm. are not an acceptable side.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because honestly, potato chips make everything better.
They do.
Like, what's so great about French fries versus potato chips as a side with a grown-up meal at a restaurant? What if I went to a restaurant and I ordered, I don't know, the roast chicken breast, mm-hmm. and it came with a side of mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
Don't you really just want that mashed potatoes to be potato chips?
Oh, God. We're never going to get to the Leafs.
Not like they got blown out by the Pens last night and they're hanging on to a playoff spot.
I love potato chips, but I'm still going French fries, definitive number one. Mashed potatoes two, because you can work it in with the chicken, and then potato chips three. I do love potato chips as a side. It's one of the sneaky great things about the National Club is you go there for a drink and they'll just bring you a little, because it's a fancy bowl. You know, with the fancy potato chips, but it's still just potato chips.
By the way, mashed potatoes are a very dangerous tableau for eating. You learn a lot about how somebody manages their mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Do you get the gravy in there and mix it all up? You know, like you're creating a stew.
Yeah.
And then what do you do with the meat? Because some people, I remember once there was this billet we had from Quebec, Patrice Dupuis, and he came and he was from the Gaspé region. I went there for 2 weeks. He came and stayed with us for 2 weeks. And my parents are the least judgmental people in the world, but their faces went white with shock as he took the entire meal and folded it into the mashed potatoes and basically created a Richard Dreyfuss tower out of it.
This means something. Yeah, this means you get out of my house.
Exactly. Yeah. From Close Encounters from the Third Kind.
We're this close to a Jaws reference with Richard Dreyfuss. You're right. How you treat your mashed potatoes in the ecosystem in your meal tells you a lot about you.
Okay, hang on a second. Let's get it out of the way now. Okay, yeah. Ask me if I'm rich.
Are you rich, Bob?
Yeah. And then you say, you individually? Oh, no, wait. And then you say, how rich?
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, let's do this again. You rich?
Yeah.
How rich?
Me personally or the whole family?
I wish this was video. Then I'd pour a glass of wine like Roy Scheider does.
Richard Dreyfuss is giving him the, okay, I'll take two fingers.
I'll take two fingers.
And glug, he just blows right
it's
through
so
it.
Oh, God. So
you might want to let that breathe a bit.
By the way, I love that Tinker's Dreyfuss brought a bottle of white and red. He was such a great guest. You don't know.
And then he starts to eat his food.
Yeah.
No. Are you eating that? By the way, are you eating that is so underrated. Okay, so we got to talk Leafs.
But again, was it the right move by me to chicken out and not get the ketchup at the fancy place?
Because one of the things is...
So I was a cow.
The things that's classy, though, is they bring it to you in those little jars.
Oh, yeah.
And the little jars are cool.
Yeah, they are.
Right? Like when you get room service at a hotel and they bring you the mayo in a little jar.
And it's cold.
Also, okay, dish. Mm-hmm. If it comes in a dish.
Yeah.
If they just plunk the big plastic bottle in front of you so you can do the...
Yeah.
That's no good. But classy places don't do that. Okay, let's talk about the Leafs.
Where do you want to start with the Maple Leafs?
Well, you're the one who has to do a show today. Do you got some kind of hot take or some kind of...
So first, on the subtle point, I'm driving back from an event where there was no way to look at a score. And I'm in the car. And Austin Matthews scores. And Joe Bowen was this. And Austin Matthews has scored for the Maple Leafs. And then, you know, they move on. And I'm like, huh. Not a lot of emotion from Joe.
So you don't know the score at this point.
But I know the score. I'm like, and I turn to Amy. I'm like, and they're talking about now he's projected to get 58 goals or whatever it is. And I turn to Amy. I'm like, the Leafs are losing big time. She's like, why do you say that? I'm like, because Matthew scored and Joe Bowen just didn't do an audio triple backflip. He said it like he would. And we'll be back after this. And I realize, I'm like, look it up. And she looks up the score. And she's
4-1.
And she says, what do you think it is? And I guess 4-1. She's like, 5-1.
Because, Matt,
like, yep.
It's always 4-1.
It's
always been 4-1.
So that's how I knew it was bad for the Maple Leafs, that Matthew scored, which is normally a point of joy and excitement for Joe Bowen, and he couldn't have sounded like he did not care.
It's funny you say that because I was mad that Matthew scored because I didn't think he deserved good things.
That's how angry you were.
I was.
No.
Let it be Timoshov. Yeah. Okay, let it be somebody else, but not you. You don't, you know.
Yeah.
Good things are for closers. You don't get score effects points.
Yeah, that was. Ooh, that was. We talk about empty netters, score effect goals.
All right. So here, I got a question for you. Let's start it off with one big question.
Sure.
Are they bums or wimps?
They're wimps. They're wimps because they lost to Buffalo in embarrassing fashion. So this was the game where they were supposed to show their true test. They had the mental fortitude, the physical fortitude, and none of it was there. If, let's say, they had beaten up on the Sabres, and then they lose to Pittsburgh. It was like tied for first with home wins. Okay. But it's the context of everything leading up to that game that I'm going to go with the harsher term, because I think we agree, wimps, harsher than bumps.
We've talked a lot on our pod and previously on our old radio show about how the NHL is becoming increasingly young. Yeah. There's a lot of changes that go with that. Part of it is cultural. Part of it's economic, as the RFA years become so much more important than the UFA years in a lot of ways. And the longer deals are getting signed earlier because your guys are, one, they're much better earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
And two, they've got more leverage earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe not in terms of the CBA, but just what their value is. You want to lock them up early and you want to lock them up for long.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that goes with this, and it's a bit too much too soon. And I was thinking about the Edmonton Oilers. And I remember somebody said, the danger of this team is that they are giving the keys to the kids, but they've never had to fight for the keys. They've never had to build their way up to getting them. There was nobody that they had to knock out of the way, whether it's Taylor Hall, Eberle, whoever. These kids are very good, and they're probably going to be great in the league, but they've never had to fight for their spot.
Yeah.
And the thing about fighting for your spot is you learn how to compete. Part of those competitions are internal. Part of it is against the opposition. Part of it's against yourself and the obstacles that you face en route to getting to where you're trying to go. Maybe the one against yourself is the hardest one. And I kind of feel like with this Leafs team, what we're seeing now is the growing pains of too much too soon for a Matthews, a Marner, a Nylander. They shoulder a lot of the blame. They asked for a lot of dough.
Yeah.
They asked for this. And now they're learning, you know, don't hold a tiger by the tail, right? They asked for this. So they deserve what they're getting. And I think, like, look, to the bums or wimps, they're not bums. Some of them are. And we'll get to the third and fourth lines in a bit. But the top line are wimps. And that's the most unforgivable sin to a sports fan, is we can forgive a lack of talent that performs as best as it can.
Yes.
We cannot forgive a surplus of talent that is underperforming. It is the most unforgivable thing.
The single greatest sin, more than anything you do off the ice, more than any morality debate, it's on the ice. If it's why we forget how many goals Phil Kessel scored as a Maple Leaf.
Mm-hmm. And maybe sometimes it's not fair.
Yeah.
Because body language or the way someone carries themselves, like maybe people care more than you think they do. But also the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
And your point is 1,000,000% true. It's after the Buffalo loss, in which they stunk and were pretty much held accountable publicly. And they came out and played worse.
Yeah.
Just gutless.
Against the team that got embarrassed last time. And again, on that game, Kaskasuo was in net when they lost like 6-1 or whatever it was last time. And we'll get to the fact that a lot of this goes on the goaltending. We will get there.
Well, we got a whole bunch
of things.
The drop-down menu for things that are wrong with this team is spectacularly long.
Yeah.
But the thing that has people spinning out of control is not the injuries, it's not the goaltending, it's not the depth issues, it's not even the systematic play necessarily. It's the fact that these guys, like I invented a stat last night, expected goals versus adversity.
By the way, I still hate expected goals, but I like yours. Yours is much better.
Thanks. You know what I expect from them versus adversity?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Because you know what they've given us?
Yeah.
Nothing.
And that goes on the young guys. That goes on Tavares as well, the captain of the team.
We'll get back to him. Put a pin in that because...
Yeah. And you know what? Getting this youth, you know something I was thinking about?
Hmm.
I wanted to do my opening thought today, but I got shot down, rightfully so. I wanted to do it on Sidney Crosby because Crosby, like... We have got to give so much credit to Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Kane, and Taves. You know what they all had in common? They all won their first cup at 22. Now, those organizations, I think, had more talent and at least more steady goaltending come the playoffs. But think about, just think about
pitching. Well, and Taves and Tane had guys like Hossa.
Yeah.
Who stabilized things. They were great. They also had Keith and Seabrook on the back end.
Yeah, by the way, Duncan Keith was 26, which is relatively young for a defenseman. Leafs also have John Tavares. But, you know, like I was joking about this yesterday. The Penguins are the ultimate shame team for the Maple Leafs. They are the equivalent of when you have that bag of potato chips late at night and you watch a Peloton ad and you see those young, healthy people sweating and they're working out at 5 a.m. and you take another bag of chips and you feel shame. And the Maple Leafs, they've got injuries and the flu. They played a lot of games. And the Penguins are like, yeah, we've lost all our top 8 players in scoring. 7 of them have played less than 50 games. So shut up about excuses.
It's interesting. I actually think you should have been allowed to do it on Sidney Crosby, because as you talk about the Pens and Crosby, anybody who's paying half attention knows you're really talking about the Leafs. Mm-hmm. The Pens are who the Leafs want to be. I tweeted this out last night. It's like if the Leafs were who they will grow up to be, the Penguins. You want Tavares to be Crosby.
Yeah.
The hardworking veteran who always anchors things in effort and just sets a bar that everyone has to match. You want Austin Matthews to be Evgeny Malkin. Big, skilled, can play a heavy game if he needs to. Certainly, like, he plays like a beast. You know, sometimes those legs get pumping and they just don't stop. You know, there's no floating. And when the other guy's out, Crosby, he steps up his game.
Yeah.
Like, these guys have the ability. Like, if Tavares is out, we go, oh, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
What's Matthews going to do? And what you want the answer to be is, well, he's going to step it up.
Yeah.
Right? You want Riley to be Letang. You want the defense core to be sort of no name the way the Pens is, but they play a smart system and they play it well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quick on the puck and they get their forwards going. You want the, you know, the heroes on the team, like Brian Rust last night. Like Brian Rust, right? All right.
Who scored the second goal? A guy I never heard of, Anthony Angelo, from assist from Sam Lafferty. Like, who are these people? I don't know.
You want the Leafs to be the Pens, but most of all, what you really want is you just want somebody on this team to feel like Sidney Crosby. Enormously talented, but even more hardworking than he is talented.
Yeah, and it's not. And by the way, on one level, it's not a criticism to say you guys ain't Crosby, but you got paid like you were in that stratosphere, and you're not there. And also, shame. The Leafs will never be Pittsburgh or Chicago for the simple reason when Pittsburgh won their first cup, they did it with Letang and Malkin under $1 million. When the Blackhawks won their first cup, Kane was sub $1 million, Taves sub $1 million, and Duncan Keith, who was a little bit older, was under $1.5 million. And I know that you have to adjust because the cap and what it cost percentage against it, but still, that window of winning with cheap elite talent, that's out.
So we can take this in a bunch of ways now that we've got our general bitch session out of the way. Because there are really specific things they need to address, and I don't think they're going to happen at the trade deadline for a couple reasons. One, it's not a ton out there.
Yeah.
And two, the cupboard is a bit bare in terms of prospects and picks for the next couple
of
years.
Well, some of the picks got traded to get out of either under bad contracts or bring in Jake Muzzin. And when you have Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares, all that money, the natural thing that's going to happen is you're going to raid the Marlies, who are not having a great year. Why? Because all the best players of the Marlies are there on the Maple Leafs trying to provide depth and scoring, and recently they're failing.
All right, so let's go there, because I feel like
what we saw last night was the third. And by the way, we will get to Freddie Anderson. Don't worry.
And we have to.
Yes.
Because he might be the most important part of this. But certainly over the last stretch of unimpressive performances, the depth scoring is it's just not there.
Yeah.
It's non-existent. And I was thinking about how Kapanen, Janssen's hurt now, but both those guys have been pretty underwhelming this year. Sometimes you see sparks of it, but we all thought when they were signed up, it was like, oh, we got these great forwards and they're going to supplement our stars. You know, they're going to be that next tier down. They've been a tier below that and sometimes a tier even below that. Kerfoot has underperformed. McCabe looked great and then he got hurt.
Yep.
And that really hurt them. And I feel,
McKayev injury hurts your team, what does that say about your team?
Well,
Nothing against McKayev.
It does, but, you know, Spezza has been a nice find, but Spezza was intended to be a fourth-line center.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think you can blame this on him. I think he's had a good year. But everybody else has been kind of meh to blah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And also, I feel like a lot of players hate money. Like, I feel like Tyson Barrie, and part of it was because, you know, under Babcock wasn't used, right? But I don't think Tyson Barrie loves money. Travis Dermott clearly is not caring about money.
Okay, let's do the D in a bit.
Okay,
sorry. Because I want to focus on this idea of depth.
Yeah.
Because
in
some ways, it's we take it out on our top four. because we feel like we, the Leafs, are
if under- they're winning, they're we. Today, we ain't we.
Yeah, today, they're them.
Yeah, you're them.
they're under the weight of those contracts.
Yeah.
They're really like an enormous chunk of the of their salary cap percentages are tied up in those four big contracts. Mm-hmm. Not so much Nylander because his isn't that big, but certainly the
still
big 7
million.
Three. It's still a lot, but it's not 11 million.
It's not.
So I guess when we look at the fact that there's not a lot of depth, you also think, well,
this was the plan. And the thing is, everyone knew it. The players, they have computers, they have cap friendly, their agents have cap friendly. When these guys signed these deals, they knew, oh, well, a lot more is going to be expected on us because we're doing something that's never been done before. And Kyle Dubas and the management, the coaching, they all knew this. Now, again, the one caveat is the Maple Leafs are going to get dinged for it for the next couple of years. Why? Because they did very well in a bunch of drafts where Matthews, Marner, Nylander, all around the same age. And so, of course, all those deals are going to come up at once. And then John Tavares said yes. So you have all of that happening in a short period of time. So you almost get cursed by your good luck and good drafting. But they all knew this was going to happen. They all knew. There was no other way than if these four guys, a lot more had to be expected of them.
Craig Button was really great on Kapanen a couple weeks ago. And he said, you know, after he had a pretty good year and people got all excited about his speed and his skill, they're like, oh, he's a 40 to 50 point guy and he's going to be 20 to 25 goals and maybe even, you know, pushing 30 on some years. And Craig, in his classic way where he has no time for this kind of nonsense, just said, I'm going to do my Craig. You ready? Yeah. I look at him and I go, 35 points. 18 goals. That's who this guy is. He's a piece.
You gotta say that louder with more bluster. Yeah. But yeah.
And I'm amazed, like, as a guy with curly hair myself,
yeah,
like, he retained his curls.
He retained
his curls. And it's real. He doesn't work on it.
Yeah.
Also, like, my curls are gone. Like, yeah. I just look like Einstein all the time.
You got wet dog curls.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I guess right out of the shower, maybe for an hour, it's kind of curly. But then basically, I just look at the finger in the electric socket.
Also, it should be said with Craig Button, no one sounds like they're disagreeing with you more, even when they're agreeing with you, than Button. Button could agree with your point, but his tone and his choice of words, you feel by the end you're having an argument.
The Kerfoot thing hurts.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't look like a center.
He didn't look like a hockey player.
He was supposed to be, if not a complete replacement for Kadri, at least a reasonable facsimile points-wise.
Yeah.
I'm watching that game last night against Pittsburgh, and I'm thinking, man, do they miss Kadri? Not just because he gave you third-line pop, but he was the kind of guy that would be out there. Like, I know he went out of control against Boston, and we all talked about how he was facing regression. I get it. I did not look down on the deal. But you dealt him, and the stuff you got back is not helping you.
No, it's not.
Right?
Yeah.
Tyson Barrie's a pain in the ass now to watch, and Kerfoot, he's fine. Fine.
Yeah, the lowercase and you, F.
Exactly. Fine, period.
Yeah.
Right? In that classic, like, typeface, like the typewriter typeface, fine. But he's also got a pretty soft game. Right. With Kadri, you always knew, like, on a game like last night, you knew Kadri would be out there flying, looking for hits.
Yeah. And remember, like, one of I'm blanking on his name, our new tough guy forward.
Kyle Clifford.
Remember after Kyle Clifford got in a fight a couple games ago and the team said, yeah, you know, we missed that. That actually really helped us. When I heard Austin Matthews say that, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, Kadri, every four or five games would do something that would, quote unquote, help the momentum, help the team, however you want to take that.
And on a game like last night, where the real sin was the failure to show up, mm-hmm. you feel like he's a guy who would have showed up.
Yeah.
And I really do think there's something to be said for peer accountability. Like, Sheldon Keefe after the game can stand there and say, this is an immature team, we're not showing up, whatever he wants to say. And that's fine. Dubas can say, hey, this is not acceptable. But the real pressure, and you know this from being in a workplace, is nobody looks worse than the least working guy on a crew.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
how many times? Because you're super hardworking. Mm-hmm. You are a hardworking guy, and everybody says it. You show up prepared, you show up on time, and you never take a show off.
Yeah.
Ever, ever, ever.
Even hungover.
Right? Which Anyway.
It happened.
You think? Yeah. And if the producers show up and they're not trying,
yeah,
they might get away with it for a day or two, mm-hmm, but it does not take long before they look like they are loafing. And that's pure accountability.
Yeah. You can always tell who that person is.
Right. And you know what? They don't last.
Yeah.
They get weeded out because the room dictates the level of play.
This room is filled with a lot of really young people who, as you said, right, very rightfully so, they haven't had to work for it. They haven't had to beat that guy out to get their ring. And by their ring, I just mean the money and the status and the line and the minutes. So
with regard to the third line, I think this is frustrating for Leafs fans because by design, the idea was, hey, we've got some guys in Kapanen and in Janssen, and even if one of them has a good year, that's great. We got him at a good cap number. Yeah. We got him, you know, maybe at the not at the top of the arc of their abilities, and that hasn't proven to be true. Both of them have underperformed this year. Janssen obviously has had a lot of injuries, but even when he was in the lineup, did you ever say, oh, good,
yeah,
Janssen's on the ice?
Nope, he was a guy.
You know, Kapanen, if I see him fly down the wing and then curl at the half wall and look for something to do, or just meaningly throw a puck.
You know who I
like? Pass the freaking puck to somebody in a position to score.
You know who I feel really bad for, Bob, when it comes to Kasperi Kapanen? I feel bad for the beams of wood behind the net when Kapanen is on a breakaway. Because if you're the beams of wood, you're going, oh, shit, this is going to hurt.
Yeah, Barry, too.
He's going to Oh, no, Barry. Barry's going to take a long shot, but it's going to come in, you know, at a slow rate.
Oh, so the boards have time to duck.
Yeah, Kapanen, you know, when he misses on a breakaway, wow, does he miss poorly. Like, just bam, he's hitting the beam of wood. Bam, he's hitting the backboard.
The bad thing about Kapanen is, you know, it's not his fault, but because he's so fast, he has the ability to create space for himself. So it feels like good things are going to happen, maybe more for him than for other players. And it's hard not to say, oh, he's so fast, he's going to have all these opportunities. But here's the thing. He can't score.
No.
It doesn't matter how many opportunities. He's like, you know who he reminds me of? Not Willie Gault, but who?
Oh, my God.
John Jett.
James Jett.
Right.
Oh, my God. I was just about to say James Jett.
Really?
100%.
That's awesome.
I was about to say James Jett. I was about to say he reminds me of mid-90s Oakland Raider receiver James Jett.
Right. You were really going to say that?
Yes.
Oh, high five. That is so weird, because that is a bizarre reference.
That is a really bizarre. Like, he's wide open every time, but then he drops the ball when he gets thrown too deep by, you know, by like Jeff Hostetler or whoever it was in the mid-90s, you know, or I feel like Jeff George was there. But yeah. Oh, no. Kasperi Kapanen. He's James Jett.
Just James Jett.
All that speed don't mean nothing.
So good.
Wow. You should probably end it. You probably should go Chick-Chick-Ka. We should probably end it right.
Well, you know what? We'll get back to the Leafs, but why don't you do a commercial here? Because I don't think we can top the third line discussion after that.
And I don't think I could top legal representation better than Jeff Pollock. Why can I not top it? Because he is our friend. Because he's really good at his job. Because he's attentive. Because he legitimately is there to help you out. And the great thing is, if you have Jeff Pollock as your lawyer, you now don't worry about lawyer things. Now you get to worry about other things like depth forward, the defense, even strength save percentage by Freddie Anderson. So much to worry about. But now you don't have to worry about the law. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088 is his phone number, pizza phone number. If you want to contact him, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. All forms of law, small family law firm. They have our backs. So they'll have yours.
I came up with an analogy, and I'm just going to basically write this from my notes because I don't think I can make this sound natural.
Right.
But I want to pick up on this James Jett thing, and then we can move on to goaltending.
Yeah.
So Babcock wanted to paint stripes, like tiger stripes, on a lamb.
Yeah.
That was his reaction to his roster. Keefe, when he started, said, be a cheetah to his roster. But here's the thing. Here's one of nature's great dirty secrets. Cheetahs are fast, but they are lazy. They are built for one thing and one thing only. Super explosive, grab for it. And if it doesn't work,
meh. Get on your back and
lie there for a day.
Let's get the sun on my belly.
Like when it happens, it is spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
It is like you need Richard Attenborough narrating it. But when it doesn't happen, they're kaput. They got nothing.
I've been on a safari in Africa. And when you see the cheetah gracefully going after and pouncing on a gazelle or a wildebeest, it's something to behold. But guess what? Most of the time on the tour, you know, the tour guide is honking the horn going, come on, I got all these tourists here. Honk, honk, do something, cheetah. Do something for all the sunburnt tourists here.
All right. What the hell do they do with Anderson? I honestly don't know.
That's the thing is, God, and I apologize, Oak Stick something, some Twitter account, and he really smart guy on Twitter. And since like January 6th, so there is cherry picking, but all stats cherry pick, the worst goalies for save percentage, 5-on-5, have been Michael Hutchinson and Freddie Anderson. Like they've been at the bottom, but they've been bad. And you can make the argument, if those guys just make the saves they're supposed to early on, it gives the team confidence and allows the team to play their full potential. So you can absolutely make the argument that Freddie Anderson deserves the most blame and Hutchinson before that. The only problem with every stat is it tells some truths, but it never tells the whole truth. And it goes back to how much of Anderson's poor play, how much of it is he's playing bad, period, versus everyone around him.
We talked about adversity and expected goals versus adversity. And Freddie Anderson is still in a show me situation with this team that he can get the Leafs through a rough patch. He folded in the playoffs a couple times.
Yep.
Game sevens have been his nemesis throughout his career. And last night was a big game. And some of those goals were clearly his fault.
I don't put it on him. Those first four goals, that was
but that brilliant fifth goal.
I know that fifth goal was horrible.
Right. And when you consider that it was 4-2 by the end of the period, the difference between two and three goals in that situation, like he just looked like a guy who quit.
Yep.
Who gave up. It was just a totally useless play. He certainly doesn't like it when you pull him. And I wonder whether or not Jack Campbell's presence is going to be helpful or harmful for his confidence and psyche.
I don't care about his confidence and psyche.
Well, except for that, if it's shot, the Leafs can't make the playoffs. But you give Campbell the
you
net.
You give Campbell a bit of a net. You give him a bit of a run here.
Do you?
I think you do.
See, a guy who's never really proven himself to be.
I know, but look at like Pittsburgh. They went, but they had Crosby. Anyway, never mind. I'm talking circles to myself, trying to convince myself of two arguments at the same time. That's the confusion you get today. See, the one part is Anderson has been really bad. And again, I don't even blame him for last night. I don't blame him for Buffalo. I blame him for a lot of the other games. But aren't we doing some recency bias here? Because over the last several years, he's also gone through a couple months where he's been spectacular, where he has saved the day. You know, if we are going to say that he's the most valuable player on the team for the last couple of years for his play, then how much should we be shitting on him now? I don't have an answer.
I don't have one either. We're both, and I'm sure the team is, I think a lot of this probably is those closest to him in that room are reading him very carefully right now and trying to figure out, can we trust this guy or not?
Yeah.
Does he need a push or a pat, or does he need a seat on the bench?
Yeah.
They probably don't. It's hard for us to say. I'm looking really forward to whatever Noodles has to say today on Overdrive on TSN, because I really want to hear a goalie's perspective. So much of that game is played between the ears for those guys, and you've seen okay goalies be great because they got strong minds. You've seen incredibly gifted goalies be meh because they've lost the spark.
Yeah.
And Freddie seems like they all do, susceptible to that. I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
But I do know this. I'm inclined to say you got to start him against Pittsburgh because he's either going to get you to the playoffs or they're not going to make it.
All right, that's fair.
If I had to play the odds,
okay.
I don't see the backup taking him to the playoffs. But then again, how many times have we seen a team turn to the backup who suddenly goes on a heater and they ride that and suddenly look like a much different team? It happens all the time.
It does.
I don't know, Matt. I don't know. Goalies, honestly,
but
are algebra. Who the hell knows?
I'm left with so much confusion. Like, if you want to be positive today, you just do this.
What for?
Well, because, you know, it's... you want to be positive in life. It's short. Eventually, we all die alone. So why not be positive? when Sheldon Keefe, you know, they're the sixth best team since he took over.
Right.
So you can. So, but here's the thing. By the way,
they have a winning percentage that's in the low 600s.
Yeah. But don't worry, Bob. This positivity, it's going to end in a second. Because I was thinking about it. I was thinking about that argument. And that's a smart argument. Hell, the team at one point went 11-1-1 with Keefe. So it's like, hey, don't worry. Since that evil Babcock is gone, everything has certainly been better. All right. At the start of last year, the team was 20-8. They were playing incredible. Then came the roller coaster. The Maple Leafs, under Sheldon Keefe, had an 11-1-1 run. But then it's been a roller coaster. And if I read you the quotes from last night's game, they sound like the same quotes during the Mike Babcock roller coaster before he got fired. So yes, as much as we can enjoy the Sheldon Keefe, sixth best team in the NHL since he's taken over, yeah.
You know, that could be a good game for you today, where you just read a quote and say, was that Babcock before he got fired or Keefe last night?
Bob, we've done that game.
Of course you have.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it would be a good time to try it out of the closet today. There's no doubt about that. It's
been a good game. But
okay, so let me ask you.
Yeah.
In football, we would say that a team often adopts the identity of its key player, probably its quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Or on defense, maybe your inspirational Brian Urlacher middle linebacker or something, right?
Yeah,
but like someone sets the tempo. Do we believe that in hockey? We saw it with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We made that case earlier. Because if that's the case, I feel like the Leafs have taken on a scorer's identity. When they're hot, they can't be stopped. When they're cold, they drift and they seem diffident and out of the play.
Yep.
They look like a classic sniper. Big peaks and valleys, troughs and high points. Like, what we really want is the consistency every game.
Ah, fell into my trap.
I didn't realize you were laying one for me. Hence the falling in.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. How much of a gap do you think there is to these two teams? The team that is consistent versus the elite team. What's the gap between those two?
Do you mean in terms of roster construction?
In terms of play.
Because I don't think there's any. Because I think an elite team is by definition consistent.
Ding, ding, ding. So when we hear, well, the Leafs just got to be more consistent. The answer is they can't be. They are too immature. They are too soft. Their goaltending won't allow it. They cannot be a consistent team. I don't want to hear they just need to be consistent. That to me, because I agree with you, that to me is the equivalent of, oh, the Leafs, they just need to be elite. Like, you know, there's nothing consistent with this team. But the thing is, there never has been.
It's a great point. And I think where you really see this is in the NBA, where people will watch a guy like an OG Anunoby put up 21 points one night and 10 boards. You're like, well, that's what he's capable of. He just needs to do that every night and he'll be great. But here's the thing. He can't do that every night, which is why he's not great.
Yeah.
If he could, he would be.
Yeah.
And it's that way. And that's like the funny thing about scorers. I want to go back to my analogy, although I think you're 100% right. But when you look at the end of the season, you look at the total. And it's not like they score, if somebody scored 40 goals, it's not like they scored one every two games.
Yeah.
That's generally not how it happens. You'll get 5 over 8 games, and then you won't score for 3 or 4 or 5. Like Ovechkin's not scoring right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think he's done? I don't think so. But that's just the nature of the beast. Goaltending can be a bit that way too. You catch the breaks, you don't catch the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
But effort can be every night. That's why we love defense.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're never too cold to play defense.
Human beings cannot relate to what Austin Matthews can do when he scores a goal. We cannot relate to that, but we can relate to effort and just trying hard.
And if we believe that, like there have been guys on the Leafs, I think Kessel chief among them, where when they were going, everybody was going. It was infectious. When he wasn't feeling it, you could see the whole team kind of sagged.
Yeah.
You know, you look at your best player, and he was such a freakishly talented guy when he was here. And if he's not giving it, you kind of, like, it's human nature to take your foot off the pedal.
Yeah.
You want to rise to the occasion. You rise to the level of the room. You know, don't be the smartest person in the room. You'll never get smarter.
Going down the analogy, you went sniper. I'm going to go what I like to do. Usually it's either food or relationships. Food or relationships. I'm going to go relationships.
Okay.
In life, I think what you want, not when you're 19, but when you get older, what you want is a good partner, a good wife, you know, however, you know, if you get married or not. The Maple Leafs, they're the hot girl with some daddy issues who's going to be wild, but man, you don't know what's, like, she can come home and you don't know what it's going to be. And what in the end, what we want is we want the Penguins. We want Crosby, good partner, good wife, steady, fairly, and this is just from the male perspective. That's what we want. And the Maple Leafs aren't that. They're the crazy girl who, you know, she'll tell you some stories about bad moments with her dad, and then the next moment you're upstairs between the sheets.
So Crosby's like Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah. Crosby's Reese Witherspoon.
And the Maple Leafs, and the Leafs are Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Kapanen's James Jett. The Maple Leafs are Angelina Jolie.
And ketchup on eggs is okay, but as long as it comes in one of those tiny bottles.
That's kind of what we've learned.
Then they're basically asking you to be dainty with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what the Maple Leafs are? The Maple Leafs, they're the bottle of Heinz ketchup. When you spray it, you don't know where it's going to go. It's going to go all over your omelet.
So I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
But we'll get to it after we talk about our Twitter controversy from yesterday. I'm going to tease it and then we'll come back to it.
Oh, yeah.
Is it better for the Leafs to make the playoffs or not? Save it. We'll get back to that. Okay. We'll end on that thought.
Okay.
Okay. So I sent out I was listening to Hockey Central yesterday, and Merrick came up with a new character called Hot Take Tuesday Guy.
Yeah.
And basically threw out a take that said, what would you rather if you had one game to win? Have a team of five Crosbys or a team of five Mario Lemieux? Mm-hmm. And he made the case for five Crosbys in a pinch, in a one game faceoff.
Yeah.
He would rather have that roster than a team of five Mario Lemieux.
First off, what a nerd.
I know.
What a nerd.
Well, you know what? He doesn't know much about hockey, so just give him this
one. Yeah, okay, give him this
one. He lucked into a fascinating question.
He can name some of the top players, but beyond that, Jeff's knowledge when it comes to hockey is pretty surface.
And where was I going with this again?
We're talking about Twitter controversies about...
Oh, yeah, right. So then I decided to steal that, and I threw out my own hot take on Tuesday, which is Better Call Saul is a better show than Breaking Bad. And I had a surge of responses that all agreed with me. Mm-hmm. But there was one noteworthy voice of dissension from one Matthew Cause.
That's right.
So say what you got to say, but be it resolved. Mm-hmm. Better Call Saul is a better show than Breaking Bad.
In your world, it is. And I can see why. It's a great show.
Oh, what a cop out.
Oh, no, I'm not done. You're wrong. I hate absolutes. Here's why I disagree with that. Because the hardest part is to create the world. Well, Vince Gilligan, they created the world in Breaking Bad.
Gilligan,
thank you. Setting the tone and everything. It all got started. A lot of the characters that we love in Better Call Saul, they got started there. Starting in it is the hardest part. The origin stories is the hardest part. Also, I think with Better Call Saul, the pacing, which, you know, I love when it's slow. And by the way, I love Better Call Saul. But I think a lot of people will give it the benefit of the doubt because they know the characters and that world. In the same way that if Chris Rock is trying new material and some of it's a C level, he'll get B-plus level applause because benefit of the doubt and people spend a lot of money. They're just going to applaud no matter what. But if I go out and use a similar material, which would be odd because I'm white, I'm not going to get the same level of applause because I shouldn't because I don't have the same benefit of the doubt. So that's why I would still go with Breaking Bad.
Okay, so I love Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things in it that I don't love, but by and large...
But you also have more opportunity to find things you don't love. It's been on longer.
No, that's true.
It's like a quarterback that should have come out as a junior, but then they stay for their senior year, and it gives critics a whole year to nitpick.
But degree of difficulty is a very important factor in determining the overall quality of a show.
Absolutely.
And Better Call Saul's degree of difficulty is higher than even that of Breaking Bad, which was high in itself. But like you said, the pacing... There's no way that should work on television. Mm-hmm. Think about Game of Thrones, and they paced it slowly and things happened over time. And when people didn't like it is when they started hitting the accelerator pedal and they started just blasting through roadblocks to get to the end. And that's kind of the speed of TV these days. You got a super high concept show, a ton of things happen, and after two seasons, you're burnt out. It's like a good Peloton workout to use one of your favorite analogies, right? Better Call Saul is engineered the exact opposite, and it shouldn't work on TV today. Things are really slow.
But, and there's no way to fully answer this, Would we enjoy it, appreciate it, tolerate it if there was no Breaking Bad?
No.
If Better Call Saul season one, episode one, just started and just came out of nowhere, would we be okay with it?
Okay, so there's a famous test that was done by, I don't know, some Californian university, but it was in determining intelligence and success for in humans. And one of the things they did was they would put like a marshmallow in front of a kid and say, if you can wait 10 minutes to have this marshmallow, you'll get two.
Yeah.
And there was a correlation between those who could wait and get two and their intelligence.
Yeah.
That it was not a perfect IQ test, but there was a correlation.
Of course.
Because you could abstractly connect the idea of, if I can control my impulses, then I will get more out of it, right?
Yeah, if you could handle delayed gratification.
Delayed gratification was tied into intelligence. And that's also true of Better Call Saul, is it's all delayed gratification.
It is. And absolutely.
The point you make, like, I expected it to be a fan service show. Mm-hmm. We all love Saul Goodman.
Yeah.
Saul Goodman.
Yeah.
Like, everybody loved that character. And it would have been totally acceptable to say, we're just going to follow a guy who's exactly like Saul Goodman around and see how wacky and zany he was when he was young. And it'll be fun. It'll last a couple seasons and I'll move on. And they did exactly the opposite thing.
Oh, yeah.
Dark, they delayed brooding. Gratification.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, they have.
Must have been so tempting because that whole world was just sitting there. Like, I think other than Mike Ehrmantraut, the only person that we really saw for the first season that we recognized was Tuco.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we saw.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And in that time, they developed Kim Wexler, who's just a fantastic character and an amazing acting job by Rhea Seehorn.
The brother,
McGill.
McGill?
Chuck. Chuck McGill. Michael McKean is so good in that. And it's such a weird character. Such a brilliant, curious character. And even just like the pathos and the tragedy that they're sowing into it, you just know, like, with every step, Jimmy McGill is walking towards his own ruination. Mm-hmm. And yet you're still cheering for him. You still believe that somehow he'll pull this out, even though you know he doesn't.
There's also a slow burn with Breaking Bad. You know, like, he doesn't just wake up one day, shave his head, put the hat on, and start machine gunning Nazis. It is a long, long journey that sees, like, when the one brother dies, when the one cop dies in Breaking Bad. I mean, that was just... like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. Like, they're like, that is also a slow burn. And it's funny, right now I'm forgetting the name of every character.
Gus Fring?
Not Gus Fring. No. Like, when Hank dies, but the main kid, the main drug dealer.
Oh, Pinkman.
Like, think about his development. Like, his development, they were going to kill him off, but then they realized, wait, there's more there. And they mined that world. Like, you know, there was a slow burn to Breaking Bad, but maybe we just remember the last season.
You know, the family stuff in Breaking Bad doesn't work as well as some of the other things. His relationship with Hank, in terms of family, that's very poignant. But with Skyler and the kid...
The kid, not as much.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's more like just like they're there because he has to have a family, or else the character doesn't work. But it's not like that family stuff ever really takes off. And... what they do in Better Call Saul that is so brilliant is it is all the relationships, all of it. And the fact that they've got the twin narratives that are sort of circling each other right now between Mike and Jimmy. I mean, we haven't even talked about Mike's arc. One, he's fantastic. Two, oh my God, that's tragic.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. But again, let's go back to the term delayed gratification. The advantage that we have with Better Call Saul is we know what the gratification is going to be. We know what that world is. So we allow for the slow build because we know at the end of the day how good it's going to be. But you can't have that unless you had Breaking Bad.
But at the same time, and any writer's room will tell you this, is they don't necessarily, like, they have a general idea of where they're going, but they're free to explore. Like, this is, the ending has already been written here. They have to get to a certain point.
Yeah.
That's very restrictive. And the imagination that they've shown in coming up with narratives that are so compelling that have to get you to a point. I've worked on scripts before, and writers will often say, beginnings are easy.
Yeah.
Openings are easy because you haven't screwed up yet. Like, everything's just interesting and you don't have to pay anything off. Better Call Saul is brilliant because it's already been paid off. You have to get there. You are actually solving the crime in reverse. But that is so hard to do.
It is, but the audience is going to, much like it's easier to be a sniper forward if you know your goaltender is 1999 Dominic Hasek. Well, better Breaking Bad is 1999 Dominic Hasek. And Better Call Saul, which is brilliant, is all these brilliant forwards being able to do what they want because they know they got that there as their base to protect them.
It's a crime show that isn't strictly a male world, which is nice to see because the Kim Wexler character is so critical to what is happening and will happen.
Yep,
that's a nice trick to play. I will say this.
Shame on you calling it a trick. It's 2020. Shame on you, Bob.
The level of acting is consistently great in both. Bryan Cranston was amazing. Yes. Bob Odenkirk's amazing. Like, you know, there's... It's... Maybe it's apples and oranges.
It is.
I just think the degree of difficulty of Better Call Saul to come off with something so poignant and like a 70s art film when they just simply could have done season 8 of Game of Thrones and gotten away with it. I just admire it so much that I'm going to proclaim it to be better than the original.
You can argue 5 Crosbys. You can argue 5 Marios. You can argue Better Call Saul. You can argue Breaking Bad.
Okay. How much time do we have left for our final question?
6 minutes.
Okay. Is it better for the Leafs to make the playoffs or not make the playoffs? Right now, they sit third in the Atlantic, and Florida is 2 points behind with a game in hand.
Yeah.
And I believe they hold the tiebreaker too.
I think they do.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it could go either way.
Leafs only hold the tiebreaker against Detroit.
We have assumed that the Leafs will do a better job than Florida because Florida has just found ways to lose. But if Bobrovsky gets hot, who knows?
Yeah. Right?
Who knows? Like they've done everything they've done without a good goaltender. Is it better for the Leafs to win and make it to the playoffs or lose and face a long, dark night of the soul?
This comes down to two things. Depends what side you're on. The side that says that any playoff experience is good to help develop young guys versus this is an immature team and maybe the only way to slap them into adulthood is to give them true failure by missing the playoffs. So it depends. What side of those two do you fall on? The side of that, you know, playoffs help to forge as a better player, or this team needs a whole lot more failure to sharpen them.
And the other thing I would add to that is it also depends whether you think the roster is fundamentally poorly constructed, that there's just too much high-end skill, there's not enough toughness, that they don't have the pieces to actually be a great team. And I think it's more likely that they would blow it up if they missed the playoffs than if they got in. Mm-hmm. They might in either case, because I think a first round exit would be disappointing.
Yeah.
But if they don't make the playoffs after the aspirations going into the season, there's no way they could come back with the same team next year. One of those top four guys will be gone.
Which would here would be my concern. I want whatever of those two options, I want whichever one doesn't lead to rash decisions.
Well, if they miss the playoffs this year, would it be a rash decision? You've played 82 games and you've really shit the bed.
Yeah.
Is that a rash decision? It's not like, it would be crazy, like the Bruce Boudreau, Bill Guerin thing in Minnesota. You look at that and you go, this just looks like.
It's the NHL. They fired 2 coaches since we started this pod.
That's true.
They love it.
That is
they
true.
They love firing coaches.
Totally
There's a
true.
Level of narcissism with that. We don't have time for that.
But if you think Dubas has done a fundamentally bad job philosophically in how he looked at this team, that they would have been better to keep Lamoriello, who would have brought in more guys
who are tougher. I'm still going to give Dubas another year. I'll still go the playoffs. You know, the funny thing is the two things that might just have to happen for the Maple Leafs. One, the players get a year older. 2, the salary cap goes up. Could be it.
Yeah, it might be.
Which is such, I know that's a boring
They answer. Face a lot of big questions, though.
They do.
They have a massive hole at right defense coming. The Barry thing isn't working, and he's going to leave, and they...
That's fine.
You know, Cody Ceci is going to be gone. They're going to have a massive... Yeah, it is good. And, you know, like, it's not good riddance to bad trash, but
you know,
it's not like they provided any answers.
The most damning thing to Babcock, to Dubas, to all the players... is the fact that on February 19th, we have, as you just said a second
ago. Oh, that's my mother's birthday. Thanks for reminding me.
Oh, no worries.
I heard the date out loud.
And then it sometimes it
doesn't. And I don't have my phone on me. I got to go pick it up.
Yeah, shocking. the fact that, as you just said a second ago, this team has a lot of glaring issues, a lot of major problems. Before the year started, do you think on February 19th, the conversation would be, this team has got a lot of glaring issues. That is, no matter how you feel about the team, or who's the guy to blame, or what is the path to success, the fact that that is a realistic thing is a damnation on Babcock, on Keefe, or excuse me, Babcock, Dubas, and the players.
I honestly don't know how to answer that question.
I know.
I don't know how to answer that question. If I did,
that'd be great.
Right. And I would lay it all out and say, here's exactly what you do. But the goaltending, I don't know. The roster construction, it's confusing. The cap situation, complicated.
Yeah.
And even philosophically, you know, do you do a Daryl Morey and trade Clint Capella and just go all in on your philosophy and say, we are going to be the greatest example of my conception of winning, even if it's out of the box, that the league has ever seen? You know, does Dubas go, you know what, I'm doubling down on skill. I want more small, fast guys.
Hopefully not that, because
I don't think so.
The Rockets are doomed.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
All right.
Well, there you go, Matt. I got to go call my mom.
You go call your mom. You wish her a happy birthday. And I'm hoping a week or so from now, we look back and go, wow, we didn't need to be that upset.
We might.
Because here's the thing. The most unsatisfying thing, we don't have any of the answers. We don't even have some of the answers.
As the great Sammy Hagar once said, only time will tell if we can stand the test of time.
Chick-chick-a. Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.